Heya, Wonju. Hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and creators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Daniel Bibby's short film Half Past Midnight follows two strangers, Harper, played by Mia Madden, and Marcus, played by Mitchell Burke, who meet in a cinema and decide to head out for drinks after the screening. In the bar, their relationship is revealed to be something more, something where romance once flourished. A romance that is now withering, yet, for both Harper and Marcus, it feels as if it's still in reach. There's a tenderness to Half Past Midnight, one that underpins the film's understanding of two adults growing to realise that the person that they thought was the one is not exactly that anymore. It's written by Daniel Bibby and Kelly Holden and comes from Daniel's own experiences with the partner he had when he was living in the UK. This episode features two conversations. The first is an extensive dive into Daniel's work, his influences, what it was like working with producer Louisa Martiri, and how he navigated the deeply personal narrative and worked his way alongside Kelly to bring it to life on screen. The second conversation is with Mia and Mitchell, two friends who have known each other for a long time, but worked together for the first time on this film. Half Past Midnight is beautifully shot by Julian Panetta, with their camera lingering and observing with tracking shots and close-ups that feel, at times, almost too personal. Their camera work is complemented by Adrian Deary's score, a score that gives a grand sense to the relationship between Marcus and Harper. Half Past Midnight will be screening at the Vision Splendid Film Festival, which kicks off in Winton, Queensland from 27th of June to the 5th of July. Visit visionsplendidfilmfest.com for more details. If you want to find out more about what we do on The Curb, then visit thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Blue Sky at thecurb.au. We're a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like yourself. So if you have the means, please visit patreon.com/thecurbau, where you can support our work from as little as $1 a month. And look, if you're unable to financially support us, that's okay. Please consider sharing this interview with your film-loving friends. We'd also love it if you could rate and review us on the podcast player of your choice. Every review helps amplify the interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. Here's a trailer for Half Past Midnight, followed by my chat with Daniel Bibby, and then my chat with Mia Madden and Mitchell Burke.
Didn't take you for a smoker.
What'd you take me for?
Are you doing anything right now?
No.
Do you want to get a drink? I mean, it's late. But I don't really feel like going home just yet.
Marcus.
Can we stop now? This is silly. I don't want to do this anymore.
So I kind of want to start off talking about your entrance into filmmaking and storytelling and using that as a form of storytelling.
Yeah, well, for me, it's always been, it started really young. And I think for a lot of filmmakers, it really does. And you sort of have that first experience going to the movie theater. And for me, that was going with my grandfather. And so he took me to see my first movie. I think it was a James Bond flick. He loves the, you know, all the old spy movies. And that turned into a weekly thing for me. So that would be how we would bond, how we'd catch up. He would come around, he'd pick me up, we'd go see a film. And so since then, I just always had this fascination with movies. You know, it was just something about it when I was that young. You see it, you know, I feel like a lot of filmmakers probably say the same thing. And then from there, it was like, well, if I'm going to get a job, I've got to go get a job at a video store. So that was my first job. So I had a first job video store, and that was great for me because I got to see anything I wanted. So anything on the shelves, weeklies, going back, watching old films, I could get that for free. And that sort of, you know, started the whole process of learning about filmmaking. And then going on from there, my second job was at a movie theater. So I've really kept this going throughout the years of sort of surrounding myself with, you know, being around movies. But then for the longest time, I didn't really know how I would translate that into, could I be a filmmaker? Could I be a director? Could I be a writer? And so for a lot of my early 20s, I just decided to go travel. And I really thought, well, if I am going to be a filmmaker, I kind of need some life experience. I need some stories that mean something to me and that would be more personal. I feel like if I started out wanting to make films when I was 20 years old, I wouldn't really have anything to say. So I went overseas. I went to London. I lived over there for, I think it was about probably 4 years. And that was just, you know, traveling around. And that's kind of where the genesis of this story came from, Half Past Midnight. That was my first relationship when I was over in England. So I went through, and I'll go into that a little bit later, but that was sort of like a real big sort of moment for me. I was like, oh, this is a big life thing. I might be able to do something with it. I can't process it now. And then eventually I came back to Australia and I was in this moment, well, if I'm going to do it, I kind of need to do it now. I've been putting it off for so long. So I decided to go study. I motivated myself. I went to Village Roadshow Studios. They were just on the Gold Coast when I came back to Australia. And there was a one-year filmmaking course there. I think it was the New York Film Academy Gold Coast campus. And I just went in it. It was 1 year, hectic. We made movies every sort of weekend, just acting, you know, doing assignments and stuff. And that's where I sort of found my rhythm, where I was starting to see, oh, okay, this is what I like. This is how I would tell a story. Understanding, you know, camera movement, cinematography, sound, editing, all the different little tricks. And so from there, that's where I met everyone. That's where I met sort of my community. And I felt that's another thing where a lot of filmmakers, that's where you meet your people. You surround yourself with people you might want to collaborate with in the future. So then the next stage was coming to Brizzy. A bunch of us moved up to Brisbane. And again, just sort of keeping in line with what I've always done, I got a job at a movie theater. And again, met some really great people there. But you find that a lot of people that work at movie theaters are also actors and they're filmmakers as well. So for this project, this is where I met a lot of people that eventually came on and helped with Half Past Midnight. So it's just many, many years of sort of finding out if I really wanted to do it, if I could do it, and then dedicating the time and just jumping in headfirst. And Half Past Midnight is sort of my first foray into directing and creating something.
We'll talk about the foundational relationship in Half Past Midnight in a moment, but I want to talk about another relationship that's in there, which you've talked about, is the relationship with movie theatres. And having a relationship with movie theatres in Australia and then going over to London and going and watching movies there, how did your relationship with movie theatres and cinemas change? You know, the stories that you would be seeing would be similar, but the surroundings might be a little bit different. So how did that relationship change as you moved overseas and then came back to Australia?
Yeah, when I went overseas, you know, that's where I didn't work in a cinema or a video store and something like that. So then I would find myself on weekends just going out and trying to find a cinema I haven't been to before. And sort of, but one of my favorite pastimes is just going on my own. I find that as one of the best things, just going to a movie theater, picking a film, not knowing anything about it, and sort of surrounding yourself in an unfamiliar space. And I did that a lot when I went to England. There's some really great theaters over there. There's the Prince Charles in Leicester Square. Quite recently, I went back over to catch up with everyone, and I went to another one that was like a 100-year-old theater that was in Notting Hill. I had no idea before where it was, and I just sort of Googled and went, and it's just a tiny little auditorium. And so then sort of coming back to Australia, sort of, we don't have that really in Queensland. So when I sort of started working again in the movie theater, I really wanted to try and bring an experience for people that came in. And so it wasn't just sort of coming in to see a movie. It was doing some themed items. Or one of the thing I was really proud of was when I was working at my last place, is I did a full theme of Back to the Future, and we had the under the sea dance, and we got a DeLorean out the front. And sort of, I like to sort of, my experience with sort of with movie theaters is there's a bit of magic there. And I love sort of bringing that to my patrons when I've worked in cinemas. And so then it was important to me in Half Past Midnight as well, I have to have a movie theater in there. And that theater is another really old theater in Brisbane, in Graceville. And we were really lucky to shoot there. And we did a full renovation for them, which was pretty cool. They were happy for us to come in, and our production designer, he sort of went in and was like, hey, what do you think if we just ask if we can renovate it and change it a little bit? And they were fully on board. So we gave it a full liquor paint and really restored it. And we're really proud of that because now that's still there. So it's like a little bit of history. So movie theaters for me is just a magical place. And I think I'll always have a relationship with them.
It's fascinating you mention like that extended relationship that you have with having it outside the cinema with Back to the Future and DeLorean and all this kind of stuff. It makes the experience even more kind of extravagant. And it's interesting, sidestep for a moment, a local cinema here in Perth, Luna, recently did the double of Shrek and Shrek 2. And like, I'm not a Shrek person myself, but they what they did to kind of add to the experience was they had a themed chalk bomb as well, which was, you know, sounded quite fascinating. But one of the chalk bombs, instead of having ice cream, would have an onion in it. So
nobody
would know until you're sitting there and you bite into it and you get this frozen onion. I don't know what the experience was like, but it's just that extended notion of being like, you're not just here to see a film, you're here to have an experience. And that's huge,
yeah.
Right? Because it's those kinds of things that stick in your mind as a memory.
And I think this is going back to why I loved it so much as a kid, is because you do get to see something that's not sort of part of your regular day-to-day life. And for me, and the stories I want to tell in the future and with Half Past Midnight are stories that maybe you're not familiar with. You haven't actually had that lived experience, or maybe slightly. You've had a little bit of it, but not 100%. But you can sit in a darkened room with a bunch of strangers and all sort of have like this experience together where it's like a feeling of empathy maybe. You can make you feel different things. And that's why I love it so much. That's why I really want to continue on and make films and tell stories, is to tell stories that, you know, make people feel things and maybe understand different worlds that, you know, they don't see in their day-to-day lives, but that gives them a different understanding and appreciation for different people and different walks of life and different life experiences.
But when you go and see a movie, you have an emotional journey, right? And one of the not all films, but some of the films that you might go and see, you might fall in love with the characters and you might fall in love with their process and their journey. And I love the way that you embed that aspect of romance into Half Past Midnight, because it is this sense of they're trying to have a certain kind of relationship and they're trying something new. And they're almost dating a movie as well, separately. But together, they're dating a movie and having that romance with the film itself. Was that a notion that you were eager to explore in the first half of the film?
Yeah. I'm really great that you picked up on that, because it's sort of the first half of the film is sort of that sort of fantasy and a love letter for me to, you know, movies that I love. So, you know, it was really important for me to have a live score and have one of those old sort of, you know, big orchestral kind of scores that you'd see in maybe an old 70s movie or something like that, you know, having the one at the start to sort of invite you into this world and see everything with the score playing behind it. That first half is sort of my love letter to those old movies and that experience, you know. It's like how important movie theater can be. And then you have these characters in there and so for me, it's like having that score. We got all live musicians on it. It was a really amazing experience. String quartet, trumpet, keys. Adrian, the composer, just did such an amazing job. And when I sat down with him, I was just like, I really want this, like, you know, just something that maybe came from the 70s, something like that. Because you don't usually see scores like that in Australian films too much. So I was like, that could be something different, something new to explore. And he did such an amazing job. And then with the cinematography, having that Wunna, you know, you see the Wunna is done a lot these days, I know. But for me, the Wunna is that staple in, you know, cinematography. Is just like, I love it. So having the score and that at the start, 100% right. That was sort of my little nod to classic cinema.
So let's talk about your cast then as well. You've got Mia. You've got Mitchell as well, who are both really phenomenal. How'd you go about getting the right people for these characters?
Yeah, so it was a completely new experience for me, because working with Louisa, she's an absolute powerhouse producer. I was so lucky to be able to collaborate and meet her and now call her a friend. So she was really great for me to sort of guide me through that process and going about sort of doing proper casting, doing a full casting call and, you know, sending it out to different casting agencies and getting a lot of tapes and going through that process and seeing, you know, different people and their different interpretations of these characters, which was a great experience for me. Mia, it was really one of those special things where when I was writing this film, it was sort of during lockdown or just after lockdown, and I'd gone back to the Gold Coast to help mum care for my grandparents because they're sort of getting on and she needed a bit of assistance. So I'd said, well, I'll come down a couple of days a week and I'll stay there and I'll look after them so you can have some days off. And I saw Mia on a commercial just at 3 a.m. when I was typing the script, and it was on YouTube, and I was like, wow, like there's something special about her. It was just a small little ad, and in my mind I was like, well, it'd be just amazing to work with her one day. I don't know how that would happen. You know, I haven't got a name behind me, but I just put that out there. I was like, I think there's something really special about her. And so then when it came to casting, I said to Louisa, do you think there's a chance? Well, could we just send her the script and see what she thinks? And just like that, she came back to us and she said, I'd love it. I'd love to audition. And that's one of the things where when you sort of get to actors that they're kind of offer only, especially for shorts, it's a little bit hard to draw, you know, big name talent. And in my mind, I think she's just an exceptional talent and probably something that was out of reach for us. But she actually wanted to audition and she did it. And I was just, that's it. You know, she is Harper. She is this character. And probably when you speak to her later this week, that she does have a story about what drew her to the script. And I feel like that's probably her story to tell if she was wanting to share it. But it was another one of those moments where I was like, oh, there's something going on here in the universe. I don't know what it is, but when she read the script, something clicked for her. So that was great. And Mitch is just one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. He's just... one of the most genuine, that's just sort of like when I first met him, it was just like, oh, okay, we're going to get along great. And he was someone that Louisa had suggested for me. She was like, I've just got this guy here, Mitch, let's see what you think. I think he's sensational, Brisbane lad, Brisbane local. And yeah, I couldn't be more happy with his audition as well. So we got really lucky because we did have a lot of tapes and we reviewed them all. But then when it came to those guys, it was just like, it clicked. I found out later that they knew each other. I didn't even know. They're like, oh, we've been wanting to work together for years. We're great friends. And that was another one of those things where it's like, we had no idea. And it just came together and it was perfect.
I was about to say, they have immense chemistry on screen. But when we talk about chemistry, right, we often talk about that in a romantic sense, in the sense that they work together and they feel like a partnership or whatever. But here they have to do three different things, right? Which is be strangers, be in a relationship, and then be in a, you know, flux state of that relationship. It's really complicated to make all of those moments feel like they are aspects of chemistry. Can you talk about building that kind of chemistry together with them on screen?
Yeah. So we had a little bit of time to do some rehearsals on that. Not too much because with shorts, we're on the clock. We've got to get there and shoot. But it was very important for me to give them the space they needed to find that rhythm and sort of find that chemistry and get there. So you know, we would have times where it'd be like, well, we won't start rolling yet. We'll get them in and just sort of run the lines and speak to them. And just sort of, for me, collaboration is everything. As a director, I feel like you find so many different things if you're open and listen. And so with those guys, it was just talking to them, how they were feeling, what they thought about different parts of the script, and also giving them time alone, you know, especially when it was coming up to the kiss. Mitch just came up to me and said, hey, what do you think if we just go to the side and me and Mia can just work through this for a little bit? And it was for them, I think because they had that familiarity and they were comfortable with each other, it made that process to find that chemistry so much easier. And like you said, it comes across on screen. It's like they do have that feeling like they, you know, they're not at the start, obviously they're strangers, but you can see that there is that intimacy there. And so them two together, I think, is the biggest strength of the film. You know, I'll go on about the cinematography all day and the score and all that. But at the end of the day, they are the heart of this film. And the performance that they both give is just, it's beyond my wildest dreams anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they're wonderful. Let's shift to talking about working with Louisa as well as a producer who, again, like I have such admiration and respect for what she does as a producer. How did you come into her orbit and know her work?
Yeah, again, another thing with this project is sort of all these little things just sort of fell into place, which was, I was like, there's something going on here. I don't know why, but it's happening again. So Julian Panetta, the cinematographer on this film, I met him a few years ago just doing a runner job, and he was doing stills for a new film that's just coming out now called Space Time. So we met on SpaceTime. So I did one day as a PA, and he was doing stills for that, and we just connected, and over the years stayed in touch. And when this project was coming up, I was sort of, you know, sourcing who do I know, who can I call upon, and I knew Louisa's work from when she got into Sydney Film Festival and won Sydney Film Festival for The Moths that Will Eat Them Up, and so she was on my radar anyway. And so I was going to send her a message and be like, hey, just introducing myself. My name's Dan. I've got this film. Would you be interested? But before that, I just caught up with Julian. We talked through the project. And he was like, well, who do you have for a producer? And I said, well, I haven't really got anyone yet. Do you have anyone you can recommend? And he's like, well, I've got this really hotshot up-and-coming producer. I'll put you in touch. Her name's Louisa. And I was like, wow. Okay, there you go. It's like I said to her, I was kind of stalking your Instagram already, thinking what I was going to say to try and get you to come on board with this project. And we just clicked straight away. We had a Zoom meeting, and working with her and collaborating with her, and really guiding me through this process. She has just been such a solid rock, because I would come in with all this enthusiasm and blind optimism. And she would come in and be like, okay, well, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. This is how you do this. And really took me through the whole process. So, I mean, I'm so lucky that I had Louisa, sort of her experience on this, because it shows. It's the production looks the way it looks, and the people I collaborated came on board because of her. Yeah, so she's great.
I mean, I think that Moths is a stunning short film, but I'm curious for you as a filmmaker, coming and watching that film, what was it about that made you say, this is somebody I want to track down and try and work with?
With Louisa, she's got a voice. I mean, you know, she's got a distinct voice. She knows what she likes, and that's very clear on screen. And with Moths, it was just like this tension, and just the way the whole short was put together, I was, from start to finish, I was just like, I haven't seen this from an Australian short. You know, this is something special. And yeah, so it's like being able to work with her and be like, hey, here's the script. What do you think? And getting her thoughts and opinions on it really helped it. And especially in the editing process, because, you know, as any director, it's like, I'm just going to keep, I want to keep everything. And she'd be very bold, like, no, I think this serves this here, this serves this here. And she was right. And, you know, and having her voice guiding Half Past Midnight through from start to finish, yeah, for me, it was just like, I can't believe it. I'm really, really lucky, because yeah, she's just, I honestly think, you know, give it, she should be doing more and more now, but I think in the next few years you're gonna see she's gonna be a powerhouse Australian producer for sure.
Completely agree. Again, like, when you send over the email, I'm like, and I saw her name, like, I was going to say yes anyway, but then when I saw her name, I'm like, yeah, cool. Well, definitely going to say yes now, because I've got so much respect for what she does and her vision as a producer, as a storyteller, and the kinds of stories that she wants to tell as well.
She's not afraid to say, you know, say certain things, you know, call out certain behaviors, especially in Moths, you know. I think it's like being able to have someone like that behind this project has just elevated it so much more.
Your story, but written alongside Kelly Holden as well. Can you talk about that creative collaborative process too?
Yes. So Kelly, so when I was doing my filmmaking degree, she was doing the acting degree. So we sort of ran in similar circles, kind of familiar, you know, would say hello to each other, but we weren't friends or anything like that. But over the years, I sort of was just following her Instagram, and I noticed she was doing a lot of writing, and her writing really resonated with me. I was sort of like, this is the kind of writing that I really like. You know, these are the sort of the stories that I want to tell. I feel like working with someone like that would really help me, because I, you know, when I did my first draft, it was very one-sided. It was very, because it was coming from a personal place. The first couple of drafts were very sort of from my perspective. And when I really sat down and looked at it, I was like, no, this story needs to be balanced. It needs to be from both perspectives. And it's for the audience to sort of go, well, maybe I agree with this person, maybe I agree with this person, or I agree with both of them. So I just reached out. Again, I reached out to Kelly, said, hey, you know, we haven't seen each other in a few years, but I really admire your writing. I think it would really suit something that I'm working on right now. Would you be interested in coming on board and sort of, you know, co-writing this and eventually just doing the full write? And so, yeah, we caught up. We had a couple of wines. I just basically told her my whole life story on where this idea came from, all the, you know, the nitty-gritty bits about it, just full honesty, and said, well, that's my story and here's the draft. Now it's yours. You can change it. You can do whatever you want. I trust you. I think you're going to be able to do something with this where it has a really strong female perspective as well, which was very important to me. So it wasn't just me saying, well, this is what I think. It needed to be balanced. And her writing, like, it just, for me, it again, I keep saying it, but it elevated it again. And she is so lovely, and her writing, it's just really beautiful. The way that she articulates things, the way that she sort of sets the scene, and really sort of down-to-earth dialogue, relatable dialogue was something, yeah, when I read her final draft, I was like, this is so, so amazing.
I'm curious then for you, like, you're talking about this coming from an aspect of yourself, like there is a personal connection to the story. And being vulnerable then to gift that story over to somebody else and to bring a different perspective, how do you make sure that your vulnerability is open, I guess is the best way of putting it?
Well, I think, you know, with Kelly, it's I trust her. So I, you know, and I saw all her work and what she, you know, what her writing was and what sort of her perspective on things is. And so I was just, well, if I'm fully vulnerable, it will only make this project, you know, I really do feel as though when you're putting something like this on screen, you have to be as vulnerable as possible. If I'm not sitting at the back of the cinema with a bunch of friends and family or cast and crew and sort of feeling like, oh, you know, a little bit like, well, that is very open. I think you find magic there. You find beauty, you find honesty, and you'd be able to find people will have more empathy with something like that. So for me, I really wanted to just lay it all out, give her the full context and everything that myself and Steph, my ex-partner, went through at that time when we were in our early 20s. And I just said, look, here it is. And so you can twist it, you can do whatever you want, but I trust you. And if you have any questions for me, I'll be an open book, because I think it will only help the script, it'll only help the film. And eventually down the line, it might help people that see the film, you know, when it finds its audience and that type of thing.
I mean, that's the thing, is like vulnerability is such a, it's a personal thing, but it's a universal thing, right? And it's the approach to being able to be open about, you know, what you've gone through, whether it's relationship troubles, whether you've done something wrong, whether the other person's done something wrong, or whether you've both done something wrong, it just didn't work. Like that is there's a sense of exploring that. And it's, you know, something that a lot of us go through, not everybody, but a lot of us go through. And in the kind of the aftermath of that, it can be really hard to make sense of it as well, and to bring a grounded sense of self to it too. So that vulnerability is feels so approachable and relatable in a way that not that it feels like therapy session or anything like that.
Well, I was just about to say, when she gave me the final draft and I read it, I was like, man, this does kind of feel like some sort of therapy. Like, I've gone back to this story, which was 10 years ago, and I, you know, needed something resolved in me. Like we kept in contact, but this was like a real thing where it's like I'm actually dealing with some stuff that maybe I put to the side before, and having Kelly being able to collaborate with me on this, it was like, oh wow, like this, I feel a little bit of a weight off my chest, you know. But yeah, it was kind of therapy in a weird little way.
Yeah. Now, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but did you talk with your ex about engaging with this process?
So at the end, I gave her the finished project. I went back to London before we started shooting and had a conversation with her, and was sort of, you know, we're on really good terms. She's married now to a really great guy. And we sat and had coffee and caught up over the years. And I said, look, I'm thinking of doing this film, and you know how much I've always wanted to make a film. And she was really supportive of it. But I said, would you be open to not knowing anything about it until I give you the finished product? And we, you know, I can send it to you, and then you can let me know how you feel about it. And which I did. Once it was all said and done, I sent her the link, and she was just like, wow, I'm in tears because this is us on screen and this is how I was feeling, but I didn't think that you knew that's how I was feeling at the time. And so we had a really good sort of, you know, half an hour chat about it. And yeah, so if we do, and my intention is to take this and make it into a bigger story, into a feature in the future, I've said to her, we could collaborate on expanding it and getting you involved from the start, because I feel like now after you've seen the short, she trusts me with our story as well. And so, yeah, so she's like, yeah, well, if you have any questions or you want to do that, we can do that in the future.
To me, I feel like some of that avenue of trust also comes from the way that you don't engage with nostalgia, right? This is not a film that is nostalgic in any way. And I use the term nostalgia in the modern sense that we, you know, have such an affection for the past that we think that it's a place that we always want to visit and can't look at it critically or anything like that. Here you kind of push back against that sense of nostalgia while even engaging with it in that romantic orchestral tone and the cinematography as well, and the deep reds of the seats in the cinema as well. So there are aspects of nostalgia, but you are not embracing it completely. So can you talk about your relationship with nostalgia in regards to this particular short?
Yeah, well, for me, I'm a big nostalgia person. I do love, you know, I love video stores and all those types of things, but it was important for me that this sort of like this story is kind of a memory, and it didn't need to have that sort of layer or glow of nostalgia on it. I wanted to sort of, once we got into that bar and sort of the, you know, it's the reveal has happened, that sort of nostalgic fantasy portion of the film's over. Now we're sort of just in real life where sort of it's the, you know, it's the hard conversations. It's the awkward conversations. It's conversations, you know, we've probably all had with maybe some significant other in the past. It's sort of, it is a nostalgia in a way that you can think about your own relationships, and maybe you could have done things a little bit differently, or maybe you could have said something a little bit differently. But looking at it in this way, it's sort of like, no, everything kind of happened for a reason. And at the end, I really wanted to get across, and I really hope it does. It's sort of, it's okay. It's sort of, you know, we're both flawed people. We've both made mistakes. We've both tried our best. And so if we don't stay together, we love each other very much. And that's all right. That's a perfect ending to a story. And so with nostalgia, I really wanted to have that at the start to suck people in and go, you know, have that sort of wave of nostalgia come over them. And sort of it feels like, because the role play kind of is a fantasy. It's sort of, you know, having that music and all those little things that you mentioned is that nostalgic fantasy. And then when the penny drops, we switch into real life. So I really hope that came across, because that's what I was trying to do. It's like, because I love nostalgia and I love all those old things. So I want to have a little sprinkle of that in there, but then also just have real down to earth conversations that might be hard to hear for some people.
No, it definitely did come across. And it's this notion of not indulging too deeply in nostalgia, in, you know, not getting drunk on it and losing your sensibility there. And when we pull back away from it, we get this sense of, no, no, this is still real life. We're still two people having a conversation and trying to make something happen here. And that's the emotional connection point for me, is this beautiful sense of, we can have a little bit of fantasy, but also there is this ground of reality too. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you. That's really kind of you to say. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Let's talk about, we've already kind of talked about the cinematography, but I'd love to talk about how you shot and planned it with Julian and getting the particular style and look on screen. How did you go about planning that together?
Yeah, so with Julian, it's kind of how I approached everything on this short. I just love to collaborate and talk to people. And then, especially with Julian, he's got his own signature style. He knows how he likes to shoot. And for me, coming up from a point where I've got references or an idea in my mind, it's like, I'm thinking I definitely want to do a one-er. And it's totally open to that. Doing some handheld when we're outside the cinema and things are a little bit unsure, or he sort of suggested some of the camera movements. Because for me, I was like, oh, it could be like this. And I said, well, how about if we do it like this? And so it was really a great experience, because at every turn, I would suggest something, then he would come back with something, then I'd come back with something. And then the final result is, you know, it is someone like, because he shot Moths and he also shot And the Ocean Agreed, and he brings a lot of different areas of experience to each film he's on. Each film is never really the same. And that's why I was so excited to work with him, because that's like, well, I've got these ideas with how I envision in my mind, but that's no good unless I have like someone who can take that camera and put it in that place and get that emotional response. And he was just, I mean, you've seen it. It's like one of the biggest strengths of the film, and that people have said, is the cinematography. And I 100% agree. And, you know, he was like, well, what do you think if we use these vintage Panavision lenses to give it that little bit, you know, nostalgic, like you mentioned before, a little bit of vintage feel to it. And so, yeah, so working with him, it was just, you know, I couldn't have imagine working with anyone else, because we just had this really good shorthand. He gave me time and space when I needed it. He would come over and just say, okay, well, I'm thinking this, can we try this? And like, let's give it a go. Worst thing can happen, you know, it doesn't work, but I'm happy to trust you. And he trusted me. So there's a lot of trust on the set with Julian. I think he's one of Australia's best.
Yeah. There's a warmth there as well, which is really important, because again, if we talk about tones, color tones and things like that, that is also a great way of connecting with mood and tone and emotionality as well. And warmth is such a huge aspect of what we need from this too. Can you talk about,
especially in the bar?
Yeah, especially in the bar. Well, I was going to say, can you talk about that in relation to that conversation that they have in the bar?
Especially sort of in terms of color palette, and for me, I was sort of like, well, the bar has to be sort of this place of, you know, warm and emotions of sort of, because that color can mean a lot of different things. You know, it can be, love, or it can be sort of anger. It's got a couple of different things. And I felt like having that whole bar scene sort of colored in that sort of warm orangey hue really helped that scene. And then when we move outside, it's sort of, you've got a little bit of the bar still on his face, but then a little bit of the blue where it's sort of like, again, it's sort of two different worlds. And that was something he suggested. It's like, well, what do you think if we do that there? And then as well at the start, we had sort of more bluish sort of, you know, colors outside, and, you know, just little things like that, where we would have those conversations of emotions we wanted to subtly invoke. And I think it really works well, especially when you transition from outside the cinema and we sort of go into the bar and sort of go from that blue to the warm, and sort of like, it's a place of comfort, but then also it's not.
I mean, we've talked to a lot about the emotionality and your emotionality of it. And I'm curious if you can talk about your experience of obviously having shot it and all this kind of stuff, but then going through the edit, watching the final thing, what was your first reaction, emotional reaction, when the credits roll for your own film, getting to see your story on screen this way?
As one of relief. It's like, wow, we pulled it off. And I also think, because you never want to have too much, I'm very humble and I don't want to, say it's the greatest thing ever, or, you don't want to hype it up too much. But I could safely say, like, when I watched it, I was like, wow, that's exactly what I had in my mind. And it sounds the way I wanted it to sound. It looks the way. I got the performances. The casting was perfect. Everyone, production design, everyone brought their A game. And I've watched it a few times since. I try not to as much as I can, but I do go back occasionally and I'm like, that's exactly what I wanted from this 11-minute short. It's especially when I showed it to my ex-partner and we watched it at the same time, it was that feeling of, it's that part of my life and her life. It's like, we can sort of not move on, but it's represented in a way that's really special. And, if I only ever get to make one film in my life, I'm really glad it was that one, because it's one that I think speaks to myself, but then it could speak to a lot of other people. And I think I've made it in a way that could be very accessible for people to view and maybe find something in it. So yeah, lots of relief. And I was ecstatic when I saw it for the first time. I was like, I can't believe it. Like I pulled off the dream. I waited all these years to do it, and I can say I made a film. And I feel like sometimes that's half the battle. People really want to do something, but you have to put in the time and the effort. And it wasn't always easy, but like seeing the credits roll, it was just a big moment of, satisfaction, I guess.
yeah. And it's a lot of, a lot to be proud of here. It's you're working with, again, we're talking about the people you're collaborating with here, great up-and-coming Australian filmmakers. Let's shift over to talking about what it means to be an emerging filmmaker in Australia now. And especially from a Queensland perspective, I've talked to a lot of people who are working in Queensland right now, which is quite a hotbed for Hollywood films, but then also it's a hotbed for emerging filmmakers like yourself. What is that scene like? What's that like to be able to create there?
I think there's a really thriving community. There's a lot of Queensland filmmakers making some really great work. And like I said, the film festival scene is really competitive, and sometimes it's really hard for these shorts to find an audience. But, I'm in a lot of different circles and seeing a lot of different works. I've got a short that I'm seeing next week from emerging filmmaker Mariah. Her film Blood Sisters played at South by Southwest last year. And it's sort of, there's a real community of these up and coming sort of, and all different types of genres, all different types of stories, all different types of perspectives. And I think, you're going to see it in the next few years. There's going to be a big rise in sort of, writer directors and a lot of crew members. This amazing, someone that was helping out on Half Past Midnight. He's a cinematographer. He wasn't on this. He just came on to help Julian, and Julian saw, I'll get Chris on here. He's just won an award for his cinematography in a student film and down at the awards this week. And I just couldn't be proud. It's like, that's another person, and art department and everything. So I really think there's going to be a big, you'll see a lot of filmmakers come out of this new sort of Queensland wave of filmmakers in the next few years going on to the next level. Because in the past, I imagine it's always sort of Melbourne, you always go to Melbourne or Sydney, but Queensland's really got something special going on.
There is this drive and this community that's being built up there, which is people would usually, a bit like Perth as well, where people would be leaving Perth and to go to Sydney or Melbourne because that's where the creativity exists. But now there is an industry and there is a place that's actually creating a Queensland voice on screen, which is wonderful. And I talked with Tanya about this earlier in the year for her latest short, and it's just this notion of encouraging and fostering that creativity and making sure that you can go to Sydney and Melbourne, but come back. stay here. Let's build up the Queensland film industry and let's build up what a Queensland story is on screen, because the perspectives of storytellers from your own home, your own city, can only really be told intimately from somebody who's lived there, somebody who's gone to the cinemas, walked the streets, knows what it's like to walk down the different paths. And that's a lot of what Moths is about as well. And the notion of the way that that film is lit too. And when I talk with Tanya and Louisa about it, I specifically talked about the way, like how train stations are lit and how the safety of train stations. And like, because my perspective is completely different than what their perspective is. And it's the same with talking with David Eastiel about the planes as well. And I talked to him about that in the sense of when I first watched that film, there was this ping every so often, right? And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Like, there's a ping, and I was watching on a screener, I rewound it and stuff, and it took me a while to realize that that was a toll booth. Because we don't have tolls here in Western Australia.
Yeah, right. Yeah, true. That's so crazy.
Right? And so...
Because for me, I wouldn't even think about it. I'd be like, yeah, that's the toll sound.
Yeah, yeah, right? I'm like, is there something wrong? You know, that kind of thing. But all of these things, what I'm trying to get at is this notion of intimate storytelling from a local perspective. And so what you've done here is that it doesn't feel distinctly like a Queensland story. It feels like an Australian story. However, you're bringing a Queensland sensibility. That's your cinema. It's your locality. It's your location. And you've then also, by virtue, have changed how your experience and relationship is with that cinema, because you've told a story in there. You've made it look new too. You've given it a sheen of paint and stuff. And so it's bringing that personal perspective, which you can only do from within, not without. Yeah. I don't know if you want to add to that at all.
Well, I mean, it's like, especially with the cinema, being able to go in there and give it a little bit extra life. You know, that was something that's really, really special for me. It's like, now, you know, our production, we got in there with a bunch of volunteers from the art department, spent 2 days, and just completely gave the whole foyer area brand new lick of paint, and gave it some new fixtures and stuff like that. And for us, obviously, it's like, well, we want it to look amazing on screen and pop. But also now you can go to that cinema, and that legacy of us coming in and making something there is still there. And, you know, it helped them because maybe they didn't have enough money to, you know, keep the upkeep. And that's because that cinema, I think, is 100 or 120 years old. And so that's something I'm really proud of, that I can just hop on the train and go see a movie at the Regal in Graceville, and that little bit of legacy is there. So, oh, we help with that. You know, that's something that's really special. The bar that we shot at is just a really great bar in Woolloongabba. Woolloongabba is a really up and coming area in Brizzy, where there's a lot of new bars, a lot of different creatives. That bar really just helps Brizzy creatives, if it's musicians, filmmakers, whatever it may be. It's very quirky, and they were great. They're just like, come in, shoot, all good, no problem. And so now, if you are a fan of the film, or if you do eventually get to see the film, you can go to that bar, and it's exactly like that. We didn't do any production design in there. It looks the way it is, and that's sort of like, I like those types of things, when you can watch a film and then go to a location and sort of, yeah, it's part of Brisbane. It's our film has two little sections in Brisbane. That was really important, because I'm a Gold Coast lad myself. And when I went to film school and made the decision to be a filmmaker, I moved to Brisbane. And so I've been in Brisbane for the last 6 years. And that's such a big part of my filmmaking journey, is being in Brisbane and falling in love with the city, and meeting so many different people and collaborating with so many different people and seeing the amazing work they're doing. And yeah, so it was really important for me that we shot here. Because it's a part of my journey as a director. So
I imagine as well, like, it's also then important to highlight that culture exists in places other than Sydney and Melbourne. Like, it's not just pockets. Like, it is all across Australia, there is different forms of culture.
Yeah. I imagine it's the same in Perth. It's sort of, you know, it's probably a city on the up. The same with Brisbane, you know, that we're doing lots of different things. It's not just the big cities of Sydney and Melbourne is the capital of culture and film. It's like, no, you can go anywhere and sort of see different stories told.
We've kind of already talked about the actors in some capacity earlier, but reaching back to your Gold Coast roots as well, like, they've got Home of the Arts there. That's where the actors are held. What does that mean for you to be able to see, like, Australia's Oscars being held in your hometown?
Oh, it's mate. Like not last year, but the year before, Margot Robbie was there. You know, she was walking the red carpet, and you know, when she got up there and she was making her speeches, like, this is so surreal for me because this is where I did my like year 10 Estedford dance or something like that, and that hit home because it's like I had my graduation in that theater, and so each time the actors are there, I go down for the festival, get amongst it, you know, and watch movies in that theater. And it's really great to see that it's because obviously before it's been in the bigger cities, and coming to the Gold Coast, it brings everyone in and all the different people you can meet. And for me, being able to just be around that at that art center, now it's Hoda, but when I was back there growing up, it was the art center that was where you went to see your foreign films. The art center would always show all the foreign films. So I would go there all the time with my mum, and that's another special thing. It's like we would see movies at the art center. And so now that that's sort of the center for our industry, it's something really cool because I get down there every year, you know, and I even this year I was down there and I didn't attend the ceremony, but I thought, I'll go for a walk and just have a look around. And I walked past the tent. And I just hear, and up next, Robbie Williams will be down on the stage to celebrate Better Man. And I was just like, that's, you know, that's just wild. And the director of that film, the previous year, he did a whole talk on how Better Man came around. And he was just in the foyer meeting people and you got to have a chat with him. And I think those types of things coming to the Gold Coast opens up the industry for more people. Because if it is just in Melbourne, you know, you probably wouldn't get down there. But if you're in Brisbane and Gold Coast, you can get amongst it and meet some of your heroes or filmmakers you admire. And that's certainly what I did. And that helped along the way of getting Half Past Midnight made.
That's got to feel so surreal as well. Like, it's just...
Oh, yeah. In my mind, it's like, I will be there in the future. I'll be in that tent, and right now I'll walk by and just sort of have a moment and just see how, you know, amazing everything is. And it's one of those moments where I'll probably remember it as a cool memory. It's like, that's really cool. And I would like to be a part of it one day.
Wonderful.
I'm going to strive and, you know what I mean? And just keep following the goal and being persistent and knocking down doors because I just love Australian film. And I think it, you know, it is having a moment. In the 70s, you know, you sort of had the Ausploitation. I recently watched Wake and Fright, the new 4K, for the first time. I was like, wow, what a film. And I really feel like with the Philippou brothers coming through and Michael Shanks now with Together, we're sort of seeing another wave of young filmmakers coming through. And I think there'll be a big moment, you know, in the next 5 years where we've got a lot of Australians working in Hollywood.
The Australian film scene is really kind of blasting off in really exciting ways. You mentioned Philippou Brothers, but are there any other kind of films or filmmakers that you look to as being like, this is something that I really respect and admire and I want to follow on what they're kind of doing? Yeah.
Yeah. Ivan Sen, I think he's really great. Kelly worked with him on Limbo. And I think, you know, one of the magic things of the Actor Festival is you got to be there and meet the filmmakers and stuff. I think, I can't remember his name. He did, what was it called?
Oh, yes, Goran Zalewski. Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that film. Yes, yeah. Massive fan of his work as well. Especially that film in particular. I love that style of filmmaking, you know. Hattie Hook and that was amazing. And she's going on to other things now. I just love sort of, obviously, genre films, or, you know, with Bring Her Back coming out and Together. I can't wait to see that. But I do love sort of intimate Australian stories. Like Lion. Do you remember the film Lion?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Garth
another
Davis,
one.
Yeah.
And he did a film with Paul Mescal, I think, quite recently. So stuff like that. I love those types of stories. And I really hope that, you know, they get continued to be made. Anything that is sort of a uniquely Australian story, I feel like for so many years, and I'm guilty of this when I was younger, it's sort of go, oh, it's Australian. You know, you think, oh, it's you know, it's like Home and Away or Neighbours or something. But it, like growing up now, I think Australian cinema has a real place on the global stage. I think our stories are important. I think our stories are uniquely ours. And I think they would resonate with global audiences. So yeah, for me, moving forward is just following in the footsteps of those guys and trying to create anything sort of with an intimate perspective.
Open up the conversation in the same way that I did with Daniel, which was talking about both of your interests and kind of the entry points for getting into acting and working in film. Where did that start for you? I'll start off with you, Mia, if you want.
Yeah, so I had a bit of an unconventional way of starting. I started when I was really young. I was about 8 years old when a mother of a friend of mine at school, she was an agent and she was helping, find kids to represent for the Sapphires, which was being cast at the time. And so my mom, sort of being a bit skeptical, was like, oh, like, I don't know if I want my 8-year-old to go off to child labor just yet. But I begged and got my way. And it was like one of the best things ever. Like, I just had the best time and it kind of just went from there. And then I'm now represented by Sarah, Sarah Linston, who Mitch is represented by too. And ever since I was 9 years old, yeah, it's just been a ride with Sarah and we've just been doing film ever since. And that's sort of how it started. Definitely started, not really working after the Sapphires, not really working with kids my own age, sort of being like the daughter or the child in these really heavy dramas, like, Red Fern Now, for instance, or Australia Day, Creve Stender's film. And I think that my heart sort of fell in love with the challenge that drama brings. And then as I've gotten older, sort of growing with my characters of, then having love interests or being an adult or being a young woman and what it means to grow as a woman in society. And that's why I really gravitated towards Daniel's short film, because I just really really resonated with the story and thought it was great. Yeah
And we'll get onto that in a moment, but for you, Mitchell, as well, what was your entry point into acting and filmmaking?
My entry point, similar to me, was when I was a little young. I always did drama. My family grew me up on movies with cassette tapes, a lot of Disney movies, but then like even A Few Good Men and things like that, like Dirty Dancing. And so film was always part of my life. And then I naturally was just a bit of a weird kid. And mum always had the video camera out shooting me. And so I kind of naturally was drawn to it. And then we have a program at my school that was run by just an incredible man who basically turned it into a state sort of program that people wanted to come to, and then an internationally recognized program that people wanted to come to. And I auditioned for that. I got bullied out of it my first time by my friends, and then I got thrust back into it. My mum was like the biggest driver, similar to Mia. My mum really pushed me to do it. I don't know why. She just saw something and she knew how much joy it brought me. And so I kind of just grew up being a theater kid, musicals, stage, and then I auditioned for like a acting school. And that acting school is like one of the best top three in the country alongside Whopper and NIDA. And they very much pushed us towards film and television. And so then I was like diving between stage and film, and I was very much loving like the technical side of film. And then ever since I graduated, and I've been with Sarah ever since as well, like going on 8 years now, she's just been such a driving force to kind of mold and shape my passion into where I want to put it. And I've done a bunch of crazy stuff, whether it be stage, a play about Afghanistan, through to like playing a prince in a made up world that, has got us a franchise and all that, to like basically making sure that short, because I fell in love with the short film medium throughout the years, because it was like my entry point into things outside of uni. And then B, when I wasn't doing big stuff, I just love the fact that you could tell a story in 10 to 20 minutes and that you could get it done in 2 days and then still be able to go and live your life, right? And like enjoy your hobbies. Whereas sometimes long form, you're stuck on set for 6 months and you don't really get a life. But short films, you can do like 10 in 2 months and have all that under your belt. And so when Daniel approached me kind of early before Mia was even brought on and he told me about it, just like seeing how much it meant to him and the fact that it came from a place of knowing and him living through it and the passion that he had for it. And he kind of spelled it all out for me. And then meeting the writer with like Red, you know, she's an incredible writer and visionary as well. Again, like me, just hearing about the story and knowing where it came from really drew me to it, because I can do a bunch of short films if I want to, but something like this is really special. And I don't think I've ever really seen something like this before, like on the page, and then the way that they wanted to shoot it. And yeah. And then obviously when Mia was brought on, I was like, okay, this is going to be a great project.
Yeah. I assume you both knew each other as well before, like, doing stuff. Had you made films or theatre or anything together before?
No.
No, we hadn't.
No, we hadn't. We'd just known each other for, like, five years, like, kind of on and off.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because you were living up in Queensland. No, I met you through Sarah when you first moved to Sydney. And I was young. I was only 16, so I didn't really know many other actors that weren't my age, except you know, a few others. And then you'd moved back up, so we didn't cross paths too many times. But then, when we got the chance to do this, it was one of those things where it's like, oh, sweet, someone that I've wanted to work with, and now I get the chance to. Like, yeah.
Exactly. That's what it was like.
Now, Mia, I understand that there was a, like, when you read Daniel's script, you felt this synergy with it in a way that was a little bit unexpected. Can you talk about that?
It's a really funny story. How do I begin? Well, I had read his script, which was basically about a couple who, it was based on, you know, a story, you know, very personal to Daniel, and we were so lucky that he wanted to share that on the page, but about bringing a couple back together and the, you know, trying to make it work when it has, you know, the odds stacked against you, especially with the partner in this situation, like having health problems and stuff like that. And they have this really beautiful idea to like go on their first date again, even though they've known each other for a very long time. And I had told the guys, I was like, you know what, this is actually really funny, because I mean, I've been with my partner for 5 years, and we actually are completely fine. Nobody's sick or unhealthy or, you know, anything like that. But I was saying it was really funny. We thought, how funny would it be if we pretended to go on our first date again for the first time? So it was very different to the script, but it was just, it came at a funny time in my life where I was like, hey, literally just did that for fun. And now it's sort of like a heavier, more complex version that I get to play on the screen. But I sort of understand that rush that we see at the beginning of the shoot of, like, you know, that sort of pretending and the masks that we put up to the people that know us best, and how funny that foreign feeling can be. And then obviously his takes a much different turn, and, you know, has all of these really, you know, complex issues come out of it, and it doesn't end up working for them. And I just thought, what a beautiful thing to play with. And it was kind of one of those scripts where I read it and I was like, this is something that I would love to be able to portray, and especially sort of breaking out of doing a lot of, you know, roles where I play somebody a lot younger than my age. This was the oldest that I've ever played. I think, like, it's at like 25 or whatever. People probably still think I look like an 18-year-old, but it was nice to be trusted in that space as somebody who was having very real issues as a young woman. I just really gravitated towards it. Yeah.
You played it so beautifully.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mitch, as did you.
Stop it.
So how did you both get into your characters then?
I feel like, for me, costume's a huge one. Like, as soon as you see what you're wearing, and that's kind of on every job that I do, hair and makeup, maybe if there's like a big change required, but costume is a big one. Like, there's all the prep I can do in the world, but until I see the costume, I'm like, okay, now I know who that person is. And then knowing Mitch was really easy, because it, like, there was already that friendship chemistry where I feel comfortable around you and talking to you. So sort of playing an intimate relationship doesn't feel like I'm up against a stranger. It's like I feel like I can have a chat with you and then build from that. So we had a really good foundation to build from. Joseph Tiernan, our production designer as well, like the sets that he built were just incredible. And I think that informed the world. So we had a few days of rehearsal, but with short films, you know, you're only shooting for 2 days, so you don't have a heap of time. So when we got onto set, that was sort of when I was like, okay, I was 90% there and this 10% is informing the rest of my choices.
Yeah. Very, very similar to me in terms of costume, but I kind of just, I studied Daniel a bit in a kind of cheater way, just because I knew how close it was to him. He wrote it, as well as the music that he sent me. Him and I have similar but a little different music choices. And so he built this playlist for Marcus, and I sat down and listened to it whilst I read the script. And I was somewhat just transported back to kind of like first time I discovered dating, and the awkwardness of it, thinking I knew it all and I could kind of hold it together and I was cooler than what I was. But really, I was just like a fumbling buffoon who actually was taking the lead from the girl. And in this instance, I'm very much taking the lead from Mia's character. Kind of studying Daniel as well as transporting back to sort of who I was growing up as a guy who thought that he had it all together, but really did not.
I mean, that's what I appreciate about these two characters as well, is that they're at an age where they think they have it all together, right? But it's that realization of knowing that maybe the person that you expected to spend the rest of your life with, it's not going to work, right? And that's really hard to kind of have that realization. Even as much as you try, as much as you try, and you both portray that realization so brilliantly.
Thank you, man. Yeah, well, you build up yourself and your relationship on a pedestal, like, because that's the way we've been growing up. Like, things should be happily ever and forever after. But then reality hits and things that we don't expect arise, like health problems. But then within these two and their relationship, I think even though her illness is like the butterfly effect, like it was the cause, but it also unraveled things in their relationship that they hadn't realized yet that maybe weren't going to allow them to work. So that's, and I think that's what this film speaks to as well. There's a lot of unsaid there as well.
Yeah. A lot of that's internal too, but you both bring it forward in your expressions and the way that you're interacting, and it's mostly in the scene at the bar. Can you talk about building that internal mindset, Mia, if you want to build on that?
Yeah, I think that Harper definitely goes into it more hopeful, and then also with this guilt, I guess, of being the one who was sick and holding and harboring that feeling of, you know, I don't want this to be the reason that you look at me differently. And I think that it really, this is like also a side note. I don't know if anyone's watched Dying for Sex on Disney. I highly recommend it, but it really reminded me of that when she leaves Steve, basically just like harboring those feelings of like, I don't want to be pitied by everybody. I don't know what my camera's doing, sorry. I don't want to be pitied for, you know, what I'm bringing to the table that I can't control, and I'm still young and I want to have those experiences and I want to live my life and I want to have this relationship with this person that's been my partner for so long, and I don't want that relationship to be taken away because of, you know, things I can't control. And it, you know, obviously the stories are very different, but it was sort of the one thing that I had seen lately where it sort of reminded me of Half Past Midnight a little bit. And just the feeling that I think women in general a lot also get in relationships where it's like, if we have something that is, you know, an uncontrollable variable, which is messing with the dynamic of the relationship, the guilt and the shame that we feel, and sort of going into that in a little bit of a Harper, I think she was quite desperate, and it's kind of sad because she's been through so much, but she just wants this person and she wants it to work so badly. But as soon as the cogs start turning and everything sort of unravels, they're back into those sort of, I wouldn't say toxic, but sort of uncomfortable patterns of communicating and falling straight back into those, just those patterns, which I think that being so young, they both need to grow from probably separately. And that's what ended up happening. But yeah, I think the internal for her was coming from a place of hurt and shame and embarrassment around this sort of like elephant in the room, but also wanting to just be a young woman who's trying to figure it all out. And that's hard when you've got something so, it's hard in general to be a young person not trying to navigate a relationship, but then having this big pressing issue like a health problem just makes it 100 more times confusing and complicated for anybody, and especially a young person.
And Andrew, like this is what like Mia and I could do on set. Like we kind of just spoke about it and then it broke down all the walls, and then you put us on set and all that goes away. And then her and I were just kind of very much just like being Mia and Mitch, but making sure that all these like through lines were there for us and for the character, that we kind of just, we could just go, you know, like there was no having to get to know each other and then figure out how each other are. Like there was like what Mia touched on earlier, like the fact that we got to do it together with already an established foundation of friendship and everything, just made for, especially that bar scene, like for the intimacy and the history to really kind of shine through, which is what made it fun and tragic at the same time. Because from as much for Harper that she wanted it to work, I think Marcus really did want it to work as well. But then that question that he asks her at the end, and I can't remember the exact line, but it's like soul crushing of how hard it hits both of them. Cause I think it hits him in that moment and then he says it and then it hits her and they both realize, right, which is why it's a tragedy at the end. But also like as all tragedies, there's also like, I don't think Half Past Midnight, it does leave us with hope, but I think that's just, it touches on the like reality of these types of situations. Yeah.
Well, it's also, it's being adult enough to go, this isn't working. Let's, you know, our lives are better rather than trying to push through it for years and years and years and years and years, which so often happens. And I think about certainly, you know, our parents' generations and things where they did stick with the marriage for 30, 40 years. And you look at them and you're like, oh my gosh, maybe you should have split like at the 10-year mark, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you could have had lives and stuff. And this, I think, is a beautiful nexus point of going, yeah, this is what could happen. Don't push something that can't be pushed. I found that really quite beautiful. And again, it comes back to your performances, but it's also Daniel's direction and the framing of that tenderness in that bar scene. The lighting as well is beautiful too. Again, as you mentioned, Mia, like the set of it is so lovely and it helps inform stuff. But I'm curious for you both then, like this is, it's dealing with bigger things. Like the, Mia, you kind of talked about it, like is it age-appropriate character for you? You're not playing younger, you're not playing a different kind of role in that capacity. But I'm curious for you both, what changed after having made this? What did you learn from having read this, shot it, watched it, and experienced the making of it? Did anything change in you both as actors?
Perspective. Like it definitely broadened my horizons on knowing that people, and I sort of thought I already knew this, but again, like it just widened my perspective on things. People have so much more going on than what we think. And two people sitting at a bar, and it's a public bar, you know, may look all good or may not. And it's, we can't really judge from afar because we're not in it. And then I think just like as an actor, how great it is to work with someone, you know, like truly. But for me, the learning point is, okay, well, how can I take this forward that if I don't know my co-star or people I'm acting opposite, how can I get to know them quickly enough so that I can like break down all those walls and dive into this comfortability that makes us better? Like when we start rolling. Like, I think that's the biggest thing. Because, like I said, it was a dream and a joy to, like, work with Mia. And we're just, and we've become closer from it. And we became close through it. And we took some mad film photos that night. So I'm happy with the content we got from it and the chats that we had.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. 100%. And I don't know if you ever can match working with someone that you know. Like, I think that's such a special experience, and you don't get it too often to have a, you know, a connection on screen that sort of came from a friendship off screen. I think that's really beautiful, and when that happens, I don't know if I, you know, I think you'd have to be a certain type of stranger to feel that comfortable with as well. So it's really beautiful. And like you're saying about the overthrow, like doing that with my best friend Annabelle, like that felt like a once in a lifetime. And it feels like a different kind of job, you know, like we've got our regular jobs and then the jobs we do with our friends are like extra special. But I'm usually pretty good with watching my own performance, but I actually found it really hard to watch this, not because it wasn't great, but because it almost reminded me a little bit too much of parts of me that I don't like to look at. You know what I mean? When she's being desperate to her partner or begging for him to want her, like those are hard things to watch because we've all been there, and having not had to sort of jump into that content before and then watch myself do that, I was like, oh my God, that's probably what I would be like in real life. And it was just a very out of body moment. But I don't want this. The iPad technology is crazy these days, guys. It's honestly
great. Yeah, what is happening? And that's a new iPad.
It's keeping me center of frame at all times. But yeah, I had to watch it a few times to take myself out of it. And I watched it with my partner and he was like, this is, you know, a different world and you need to remember that it is acting and it is fake people. I was like, I know this more than you. I am an actor. And, you know, watching it a few times, I sort of realized, I was like, okay, I don't have to compare this to myself just because I haven't seen myself act it before. So that was a really great takeaway for me. Yeah.
As the last question, I mean, the cinematography for this film is really beautiful. And Mia, you get, like, the opening shot is just a wonderful one. Can you talk about the experience of choreography of that, and then your first time actually seeing that in the finished form?
Yeah, it was incredible. Everything was it one camera, Mitch?
Yeah, Julian had one camera. Yeah. Julian's incredible.
Julian is incredible, and he was sort of doing it all, and it was a lot of fun. It was my first sort of short since The Overthrow, which was with all of them, like cast and crew were friends. So this was like a kind of different experience working with, you know, it felt a bit more like a set. And I just really enjoyed working with Julie, and I thought that he was incredible. And just having that intimate relationship with the DP when you are doing a short, I think is really great. Yeah, being able to shoot that opening shot and everything leading up to the cinema, I just thought it was incredible. And I was looking at the monitor and it just looked so great. But again, like not enough to see what it was really going to look like. So I kind of had this inkling that it was going to look really awesome. And then I saw it once it was graded and it was fantastic. Yeah. And yeah.
That shot with the score is like one of the like most beautiful shots I've seen. Like just incredible. Mm. Seriously. The fact that it's a live score too.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I was just blown away by it.
Well, what's that experience like, having a live score?
Well, I've never been a part of something like that. Like, and the fact that they got a live score for, it just like elevated the whole short, the whole experience. Like it just elevated. It went like, this is legit, which it was already. But the fact that it's a live score, I don't know, it just elevated it, really.
I think you forget what happens. I forget that post exists and that like half the work and there are a whole bunch of new people that come on board, and seeing the videos that Daniel had shared of like, you know, everyone in the room playing like violins and cellos while watching the short. Yeah. I was like, that's crazy. Like, you know, it's just crazy to see. And it was just really beautiful. I think that string sort of melody to it is what made it so emotionally gut-wrenching as well, you know, like, sorry, it just goes through that story with them. And being able to, I think music's a huge part, if not 50% of what the, because in my perspective, a film is good if the emotions that are meant to be felt are felt by the audience. And for me, at least, a huge part of that is the music. Like, you could play upbeat music to a really sad show and I probably wouldn't be upset. Whereas, like,
exactly,
you put on like a happy show with sad music and I'll be really sad. So music's such a huge part of it. So to have that, live score and that incredible composers was really awesome.
Well, Mitch, it's been a delight to be able to talk with you both. I love the film. I thought it was really wonderful. I'm excited to see what the journey is like for this particular short, but also seeing where you're both going. You know, it's been great to see your careers kind of go and swerve into different ways. And as you get into, you know, more kind of the dramatic stuff like this, I guess, I'm excited to see what you'll be able to create on screen. So, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Andrew.
I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Truly. Yeah, let's connect. I appreciate it. Thank you, man.
Thanks for listening to this chat with Daniel Beebe, Mia Madden, and Mitchell Burke. Half Past Midnight will be screening at the Vision Splendid Film Festival from 27th of June to the 5th of July, 2025. Further interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review, and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'll see you on the next one.